Welcome to Believe. My name is Nicholas Upchurch. We have a very special guest today. Our website is believe.love. Our YouTube is youtube.com/believeloves you. And of course, you can get us on iTunes at believeitunes.com. And today we're really going to get into some very important topics. I have an extremely special guest with me today, Dr. Ruchna Patel. Dr. Patel, how are you?
Good. I'm doing well.
Great. So let me tell you about Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel went to a great school, Northwestern University, and she also went to Toro University. And her background is in emergency medicine. And she's been practicing in the area of medical marijuana since 2012. And I have some really important questions for Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel, let me ask you, should people be afraid of medical marijuana?
Not at all. Absolutely not. It's actually, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's one of the safer medications to use. And I say this with having had the background of seeing patients who have overdosed on medications. So, you know, I've treated patients who have overdosed on opioids, on alcohol, on marijuana, and alcohol and opioids can kill you, marijuana can't.
I see. So, you know, my story is that I grew up and actually there was alcoholism in my family. Like you said, other drugs can have really, really kind of troubling side effects and troubling effects in terms of, really alcohol is a drug. And I actually thought marijuana was really bad. I've never smoked marijuana, but it just is legalized here in Florida now. We're in Miami, and I'm really trying to figure this out because I actually am becoming more and more open-minded, actually have had some very interesting experiences that I can get into later. But do you think the tide is turning in terms of people's perception of this? Because a lot of people are open to it. They see the sky isn't falling. Even recreational use is legalized in, I think, Colorado and a couple other states. But will people get addicted to it? Will, you know, what are some of the things that we can kind of talk about in terms of some of the hesitation that might still be out there? And what are you seeing on your end?
Sure. So let's start with this whole topic of addiction.
Sure.
Let me put that into perspective. So, just like any other drug or medication, it does have a potential for addiction, but it's a whole heck of a lot less than tobacco and alcohol even. Okay. So just to rattle off some numbers to put this into perspective, the potential for addiction to alcohol is that, you know, one in every 11 people are likely to get addicted. With tobacco, it's one in every 4 people are likely to get addicted. With marijuana, it's about one in every, I believe it's 14 people are likely to get addicted. So it is a lot less than tobacco, a lot less than alcohol. And it probably falls around around the addiction potential for caffeine. Now, here's the other thing. A lot of it depends on how you're using it, right? So these other substances that I spoke of, tobacco and alcohol, the people that are likely to get addicted are people that are generally overdoing it to begin with, right? So you can have somebody that's drinking a glass of wine a night. The potential to get addicted is very slim, as opposed to someone who's having, you know, a pack of beer a night, more likely to get addicted. So it's the same with marijuana as well. And so one of the things that I emphasize in my practice is that I believe in lowest effective dose, and I also believe in using marijuana at a minimal frequency. And really, that's how you get optimal effect from marijuana in the first place.
Well, yes, I can really understand what you mean. It seems like the odds are a lot lower of somebody getting addicted. And there are some important recommendations you make, especially at your website, that's Dr. Ruchna Patel, but that's spelled R-A-C-H-N-A Patel, P-A-T-E-L.com. But let me ask you this, is it also true that you can basically sort of have this medicine, and I do think this is a plant medicine. Actually, I do think this is a plant medicine. I have never smoked marijuana or I had to take that as a medicine, but I really do think it is. And the reason why is one of the life-changing things I've had is with ayahuasca in Peru. And that's a whole, we're not going to necessarily dive into that, but it's such an amazing story. People use that as a medicine to actually get off drugs. But let me ask you this. Can you sort of have the benefits of this medicine, medical marijuana, which I do think is a medicine, without getting high or without smoking it?
Totally. Totally.
How do you and do it that? How does that happen?
So I'm a big, so here's the thing. I feel like the world has been using marijuana all wrong. And they've been overdoing it. So a lot of what you hear of are, you know, people who've used marijuana in high school and in college, likely they overdid it, which is why they probably experienced things like anxiety, paranoia. Those are some of the more common side effects from overdoing marijuana. But here's the thing, in general, with medications, here's what you want to keep in mind. There's sort of a therapeutic range, okay? So there's doses where the medication is subtherapeutic, there's doses where the medication is therapeutic, and there's doses where the medication is toxic, okay? So when we talk about people having these side effects like the high, the paranoia, and the anxiety, that comes from taking toxic amounts of the marijuana, okay? Now, if you stick within that therapeutic range, you'll get the medical benefit from the marijuana, but you won't get the side effects like the high.
Okay, so there's a range that you sort of can stick into that you won't, it's not in the high zone, it's under it, right?
Right, exactly.
You still get the benefits.
Right, exactly. And this is the case with any medication in general, you know, so even ayahuasca.
Sure. Yeah. And that's not one, that's actually not one to take lightly. Actually, there's one of the interesting things about ayahuasca is that it's definitely not recreational. And that's another story, but I recommend people look at your website, Dr. Rachna Patel, again, rachnapatel.com, rachnapatel.com to get information about medical marijuana, but also look into ayahuasca. It's very interesting. But and it also, it to me, this opens the door to a lot of things, a lot of possibilities. But let me ask you this. So people's fear, anybody who may still be fearful of medical marijuana, what is your message to them? It seems like there's a really deep message. You're really trying to help people. I can tell because you want this message to get out there. You're an authority. Yeah. You're a doctor. You work very, very hard. And you chose this as a doctor, which is not an easy thing, I would say. I would say that society is pretty accepting, especially in certain areas of the country. But there are, you know, you chose this. You believe in it. What is your message to people just to kind of, we understand their concerns because, again, in the 50s, I think they played videos where people were like, they thought that their hair was going to get lit on fire if they touched marijuana. I mean, there was a lot of propaganda against it. What's your message to people? What do you want them to know about what you're doing?
So let me go into why I sort of am advocating for this medication.
Sure.
So again, with my background in emergency medicine, a lot of what I saw were sort of the not so good things that prescription medications did. So let me give you some examples.
Okay.
I saw overdoses on opioid medications, right? And these are very commonly prescribed medications for pain management. You know, someone comes in with say some sort of abdominal pain, and you know, we make sure in the emergency room that there's no acute cause of it. There's nothing emergent going on. And typically, what would happen is that you know we'd write them a prescription for this medication that's highly addictive. And that could potentially kill you if you take too much of it. And they're walking out with this medication, right? And then I also saw, I saw overdoses. And then I saw patients that had become addicted to these medications. And they would come into the emergency room seeking a prescription for these medications so that they could, you know, ultimately get their high off of it. And so it wasn't being used for medicinal purposes.
Properly.
It was being used for recreational purposes. And then I also did a rotation, toxicology rotation. And overall, I mean, the whole purpose of this rotation was to treat overdoses in general from either over-the-counter medications and prescription medications. So just taking a step back, it was like, okay, this is not what I signed up to do, you know?
Sure.
And I happened to find out about the field of medical marijuana because I was browsing around on Craigslist and I saw an ad, that said medical marijuana doctor needed. So definitely piqued my curiosity. I started Sure. looking into what the field was all about, but then I also started looking into the research. And I felt like I hit a gold mine of information because I saw a lot of potential from the research that I read in its potential to help treat to help manage pain.
What are some of the benefits of medical? Like you know the like you said. I want to understand because I think it's a really unselfish thing. What you've done to be a doctor. You went to Northwestern. I went to University of Michigan. Northwestern's actually very good school. And then Toro University as well. So you saw what was going on with the pain medication. And that's another story in terms of maybe the money involved and why they're pushing that on doctors. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know that they are pushing it on doctors, but I would say that it's definitely a topic worth exploring in the future, and we're going to on the show. And also, we understand people want to make money. It's not such an it's a difficult topic in terms of pharmaceutical companies. It's not something that's a big topic. But it sounds like for whatever reason, you saw that these things were not people were getting addicted to them, and maybe. That's not something a pharmaceutical company would want either, maybe, but it was just happening. You saw there were some other alternatives. Your interest was piqued. And then in terms of treating pain, I'd love to know what are some, so if people aren't going to be scared of it, what do they need to know that's good about it? What are the conditions that's commonly treated? And you started to go into one. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. So let me tell you about the three most common conditions that I treat in my practice. Chronic pain is one of them. Okay. So that's a pretty large general category. Within chronic pain, I'd say back pain I treat very commonly, arthritis, fibromyalgia, migraines. Those are some of the more common conditions that I treat. The next condition is anxiety, and after that is insomnia. So these are definitely conditions where I feel like from a physician's perspective that the marijuana does a better job of treating these conditions than pharmaceutical medications do.
Wow. And what was the, after you read the studies, because there are many studies, we're going to actually go over some coming up here, just a couple, but just to gloss over it, but which you can't do. There's so many now. You can't just gloss over it. But so not only did you see these studies, but what really was a turning point? Was there a story or something that, you know, we really want to open people's eyes. If you're telling me this is safe, you know, I think there are a lot of really smart people now who are coming around and saying there is something to this. Maybe there's, and what else has been overlooked? Maybe what other plant medicines might exist? But this is a great one that's working right now that people can use. But was there a story or a turning point where you are like, this is actually better than some of the pharmaceutical drugs? What did you see?
Well, it was being a good clinician involves not only having the knowledge base, but then also having the clinical experience as well. So that turning point for me came when I actually came back to California and started working at a medical marijuana clinic. And when I started to actually interact with patients and see the results that they were experiencing, overall, that was like, okay, you know, the research is one thing, but to actually see it benefiting patients was sort of the turning point for me.
What did you see? What were some of the stories like? Was there something that happened to somebody? Like a couple things that, I mean, to see it in person, it must have really opened your eyes and convinced you. You made this your life right now. So was there a specific?
So Here's what I saw. Okay, so let's just take fibromyalgia patients, for instance.
Okay.
These are patients that a lot of times they're on a cocktail of medications. They are the patients that are dismissed, you know, by a lot of doctors. They're told that, oh, the pain is in your head, sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So they're sort of stuck in this rut where, you know, they're actually experiencing pain, but they're being dismissed and they're on these cocktail of medications that don't work for them. And what I saw was that in a lot of these patients, once they started taking the medical marijuana, little by little, they were able to come off of the pharmaceutical medications and just use the marijuana to help manage their pain. Now,
wow.
This isn't something that I was expecting.
Okay.
I was expecting that they would stay on the pharmaceutical medications and then add marijuana to their arsenal of you know, tools that they can use to manage their pain. But instead, I was seeing patients come off of their pharmaceutical medications. So I thought that's huge.
Wow. Go ahead. Continue.
Oh, because the thing is that's really what you want to see as a doctor.
Sure.
I think a lot of what happens now is that you prescribe a medication, the patient's having side effects, so you prescribe another medication to treat the side effects, or, you know, a medication's not working, so you're gradually increasing the dose of the medication, and then once you hit the max, you add another medication, you know, so that, you know, they're taking all these synthetic chemicals, and it may not necessarily in the long run be good for them.
Right. And this is groundbreaking because a lot of times this can be for life. I mean, some of these chemicals that you're mentioning, I think one of the big groundbreaking things is to see somebody's pain subside. And then in addition, them being able to get off those pharmaceutical drugs. And I would just say that pharmaceutical companies have done a lot of great things over time, and you know, it is a business. And I think as a society, we have to come to terms with how can we, and it's easy for me to say because I'm not running a pharmaceutical company, but how can we, and I'm not a lobbyist for a pharmaceutical company, and that's really what it's all about. The truth is, that's what it's all about, in my opinion, and that's just my opinion. And so when I hear stories like this, I know you're just a doctor, you're doing it objectively, and that's actually your job. My job, what we want to do is not to demonize the pharmaceutical companies because they've done a lot of good things, but also I think it could be okay to release some of that control and transition maybe, if we can, into helping people more, even more, to make the profit that we might make instead of having to upsell different things and get people on a cocktail of things, if we can do that. I mean, we'd like to do that. I think it's probably better for everybody. We'd like to do that because it's probably actually safer. And I think there could be a way. Again, it's easier for me to say, I'm not running a pharmaceutical company, but to transition into that would be amazing. It can also be used as an anti-inflammatory. You must have seen some amazing results with that. Is that right?
Yeah. So conditions like arthritis, for instance, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, these are all conditions where they're autoimmune conditions, right? Where your own body is attacking your own body. And so in the process, it creates a lot of inflammation. And that's why you're getting a lot of these symptoms like pain, okay, for instance. And so the way in which marijuana is helping is that it has a lot of anti-inflammatory properties. It kind of works at the very cellular level it kind of targets cells that are involved in, inflammation. It targets the chemicals that are sending messages to increase inflammation. It kind of, tampers that signaling, to help reduce the inflammation that's going on. And then that in turn helps to reduce the pain that these patients are experiencing.
And it's natural. It's natural. It's, you know, and a lot of people have said this I've never smoked marijuana in my life. That's kind of a thing we hear growing up, you know, oh, it's natural. It's a plant. It has to be good. Well, I don't know about that personally. You know, everything natural. I mean, there's certain things you won't eat that are natural. But this, you know, I think that's so amazing. It's just an amazing thing that something can have that kind of effect and be a plant. It's a combination. It's a healer. It's really a healer. I think we have to be careful. You know, people can get addicted, but there's a point. You've provided some amazing information about the point which you don't have to get high. You can actually reap the benefits as a medicine or sort of be helped. And there's a lot of, there's oil, there's different things I've heard of. But, you know, I think there are a lot of people on the fence. One thing you really mentioned, Dr. Patel, again, I'm talking to Dr. Rachna Patel. Her website is Dr. Rachna, that's RachnaPatel.com. You've been very successful. You are a doctor. We have people interested in money and business and bettering their lives, having success, true success, not just with money and business, but also being happy. But a lot of times for people right now, we do live in a world where money is important, that can go together at times. But really, in terms of money and business, you've been very successful and you have a unique story. I know you have a story where you're, tell me about your parents. Tell me about your story and how you became successful, because I think you're a huge success. And I think not only in terms of money and business, because becoming a doctor is tough. I have friends that are doctors and it's like years and years and they do floors and work 16-hour days and they're not really paid that much during residency that's what I've picked up on.
Yeah.
And it's like a decade of work. And actually, I have a friend that said, you know, he's so worn down. He has three kids now throughout this trek through medical school. And he's so worn down that he's like, I need to extract every penny. He's like, I wouldn't even do this if I could. Anybody who gets through that is somebody who pays attention to details, has an amazing ability to get things done and be successful at basically, in my opinion, whatever they would want to do. So what could you tell us about your story, if you would, and tell us what you would recommend to people that who do want to be successful, no matter where they're coming from in life?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of my motivation derives from seeing my parents work hard. Mm. I have immigrant parents that came here with not very much. You know, I grew up in the ghetto in New Jersey, so a town called Jersey City. And I lived there until I was age 12. Now, a very important value to my parents was that they wanted my brother and I to get the absolute best access to education. So they worked very, very hard. I mean, my father, he started off as a cashier working at Duane Reade, which is like Rite Aid or CVS. And then he ended up running his own newsstands. I saw him sort of endure the extremes of temperature in New York City. In the summertime when it gets really, really hot. Yeah. And he's on his feet for 10 hours a day doing, you know, basically manual labor. He was selling like, you know, sodas and candies and newspapers. There's not very high margins on those things. My mom worked at a factory where they made, I don't know if you heard of this company called Isotoner. They made gloves and I think socks and stuff. But so I grew up seeing my parents work very hard and they did everything possible to get us access to the best education. So growing up in the ghetto, you know, you don't have access to the best of schools. So they made it a point to get in the right zip code. And so they purchased a home in the town in New Jersey that had the best. It was the number one ranking high school in the entire state of New Jersey. Now, granted, we didn't have the nicest home. We had the train running through our backyard and we had electrical towers on both sides of our home. But we then had access to one of the best high schools. I think it was in the entire country even. So I did find myself when I was there lagging way behind compared to the other students. I mean, you have to imagine, you can imagine these students had access to basically any resource that they wanted. You know, they were spending their summers at Johns Hopkins in the gifted and talented program. You know, they had private tutors to teach them piano and violin and private tutors to tutor them for the SAT. So
Johns Hopkins is one of the best
Yeah. Yeah. And they were spending
hospitals. Is that right? Or yeah. medical schools?
Just even undergrad.
Undergrad. Sure. In it's general. A school, yeah. right? That's a, that's one of the
it's
top.
A, it's, yep. It's okay. a national university.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
So they were privileged enough to spend their summers there, even as, you know, seventh and eighth graders, even younger sometimes, even as, you know, fifth and sixth graders. So they had a lot of access to resources. So I did find myself lagging behind, but we all have free resources available to us, right? And that is work ethic, discipline, hard work, perseverance. And if you can sort of hone into those inner traits that you have, nothing can stop you. You know, the only thing that you have to get in your way is yourself. So if you get out of your own way, the sky's sort of the limit. You know, just seeing where my parents, where they came from to where they got my brother and I, is my motivation, you know? And I also consider it a privilege. Not everybody is fortunate enough to have the experience that I have had. I think my education is a privilege. The fact that I had access to one of the best high schools in the nation, that then got me into Northwestern, that then got me into medical school. Now I'm in the position where I can use this education to do good in the world.
Yes. And you've, in my opinion, you're taking a step in the right direction, because it's a tremendous, tremendously unselfish thing, I think, to open the door to things that may not completely be dependent on money in terms of medical marijuana and other plant medicines that are being studied right now. In my opinion, they've been used for thousands of years in different parts of the world. Chinese medicine, there was a Qigong hospital, Qigong, that's two words, Qigong hospital in China, where they treated 200,000 people with like about over 20 Western doctors on staff as well. And that, you don't have to comment on this, I will. It's just the overall statement I'm making is that they shrunk tumors. And the government in China shut that down, I think, in 2000 or 2001. Anybody can look that up on Google. And I've experienced firsthand, not a tumor shrinking, but, you know, people experience healing with energy. But then you get into things where there are studies on that, actually. Again, there were a lot of Western doctors there. But then you get into some things. This is much more developed in terms of medical research, peer-reviewed science. And actually, this is something where people are getting real results, and it is being used by the best doctors now in the world. And I think you're one of them, but it's not all based on money. And if we go back to your story about how to be successful, you with your parents saw such a sacrifice, and you probably felt, wow, they've done all this and now we're in really great schools, and they did so much with so little, and I want to do the best I can. But let me ask you this. You mentioned drive and determination. What do you think, if somebody's having trouble becoming driven to become a doctor, to get a better job, start a business, what is that secret formula or that thing inside of you that you would point to for yourself that really enabled you to do a great job with your opportunities?
I think it's gratitude, because, one is giving back to my parents for the sacrifices that they made. But second is also look at all that I have and look at all that I can give to look at the change that I can impact with what I have. Just going back to that ultimate purpose that, you know, what am I looking to do in this world?
What is that? Tell me.
It's just to impact people's lives, you know, like to be able to give what I was able to experience in life. You know, I'm a big what I would like to do is channel my energies towards access to equal education, so that there may be some diamonds in the rough like me that I can give the same opportunity to that life gave me. That's ultimately what I'd like to do. But just in general, you know, on a day-to-day basis, to be able to help relieve someone's chronic pain, to be able to help help them interact better, because now, you know, they're not anxious anymore. To be able to help them, you know, be more productive at work because they're sleeping better, just even things like that. That's what I'm after, is to impact change in people's lives.
Well, I think you've done that. I think you are doing that. And so gratitude. So what you would point to be successful is gratitude. And one other thing stuck out to me, because I've talked a lot about already on this show, believe it's sort of that without winter, we may not know what summer is. So yeah. When you said mm-hmm. you saw it as a positive thing, not just your education that you went to great schools, but what I got when I saw the description that we kind of read about your story is that mm-hmm. it sounded like you're thankful for every part of your life, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. I mean, that experience of living in an underprivileged community and then going on to live in this affluent neighborhood, I wouldn't give that up for the life of me. What did you gain from that?
Because that's a really mature, beautiful way to look at it, that we all could look at things like that, including me, more and more. What did you gain from that? Tell me why you're thankful.
Well, just the perspective. I mean, how often do you get, I think more and more we're becoming this sort of classist society, right? Mm-hmm. And you can very well stay in your little bubble where you don't have to interact with people of a different socioeconomic status as much, you know? And so it gives you sort of just perspective that...
There's more to life. Basically people can be sheltered no matter where they are if they're only looking in their backyard, right?
Yeah. And also it's not, there's this perspective that, if I make more money, mm-hmm. it will buy me, you know, everything that I want in life. I didn't see that to be the case when I moved into this affluent neighborhood. We're all human.
That's right.
And we all experience that full spectrum of emotion. Money doesn't shelter us from that. Just that deep perspective that I got, I wouldn't give that up for anything. It gives me the ability to understand where people are coming from. And I don't know if I would have had that if I didn't have that experience. Going through it was tough, definitely, you know, just adjusting culturally, having to catch up academically. But, you know, now looking back on it, one of the most wonderful experiences I could have ever had, you know?
Sure. And we have a video and an audio, a clip from one of our shows, Understanding is the Key to Success, because your increased perspective, your wide-ranging perspective probably allowed you to succeed at places where it's not just one type of person. It's a multitude of people and people coming from all over, and actually you can relate better. You can not only what I'm hearing from you, Dr. Patel, is that you can actually, when you can understand more, you can see details. You probably notice that you pick up on things maybe that somebody that if it were given to them, you saw that as a positive because it allowed you to see a greater perspective. And then when you're working in school, when you're figuring out how to become a doctor, when you're doing any of these things, did it allow you then to see all those details you needed to see and be motivated to do that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of being a doctor is being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes and sort of walk through their experience, because you need to be able to sort of, you know, you have all this knowledge, but you sort of come to their level, explain to them what's going on in a way that they can understand, right? So a lot of that involves putting yourself in that person's shoes.
That's beautiful. That is truly beautiful. And again, our guest is Dr. Ruchna Patel. Her website is Rachna, spelled RachnaPatel.com. She's a doctor, a very brilliant doctor, I think. And what I want to ask you, Dr. Patel, the last topic I'd love to get into is, I'm just going to put on screen for our viewers on YouTube. Again, our channel is youtube.com/believeloveyou, and our website is believe.love. But we're looking at, I'm kind of just going to just gloss over a couple things, and I love your comments because I think this is really applicable to some of the things we've talked about already. But what I'm looking at, especially in Europe, and people have kind of tipped me off to this, but there's nothing conclusive yet. I understand that, and that's okay. But it's just so amazing that, and again, I've never smoked marijuana in my life. I've never drank alcohol, which is actually not common. That's actually pretty interesting. I have had the benefits of ayahuasca, which is a plant medicine used in Peru for thousands of years. But there's some really amazing clinical studies. I'm talking about at mainstream universities. We're looking right now, numerous human clinical trials of cannabis for cancer in 2015. And this isn't necessarily smoking marijuana, but if we can just look at some of these, and I'll just kind of explain what I'm looking at. But
yeah,
these go all the way back to 1998, clinical trials of cannabis for glioma in Spain, or I think I'm saying that right, but sounds like a type of cancer. There's using cannabis to fight multiple myeloma. It's incurable cancer of immune plasma cells. And there are so many of these. A lot of these are in Europe. Another one, upcoming trials of the impact of cannabinoids. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you said it right.
On cancer, although not much information is available. First, the Colorado Department of Health and Environment was authorized to fund cannabis trials with $9 million, and $1 million of that is going to a trial titled Medical Marijuana in the Pediatric Brain Tumor Population, and that could be on pain. But if we're going to go to another page here, and this just, again, our viewers on YouTube can see some of these. Sean D. McAllister he's a scientist, a PhD at the California Pacific Medical Center Research Institute. This study was about reduction of breast cancer cell proliferation. And so to go along with some of the things you talked about, Dr. Patel, because there are so many of these, and they're just building and building. Is there any validity to this? Do you think in the future cancer could be used to help? Excuse me. Do you think in the future medical marijuana could be used to help cure cancer?
Okay, so here's what I'm going to say. Marijuana at this point, it has the potential to cure cancer.
Wow.
But we don't know yet.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
What we do know is based on research done in cell cultures and in animal models. So some of those studies that you sort of read
referenced,
off,
yeah.
they've been done that you referenced. Yeah. They've been done in cell cultures and in animal models, and animal models, mainly mice we're talking about. So the marijuana has shown anti-cancer properties, right? So a couple things that it does. It's shown to reprogram cancer cells for what's called apoptosis or cell death. Essentially, cancer cells, they forget to die. They just keep on reproducing. And so healthy cells know when they have to die, right? And at some point, they stop reproducing and they die off. But that's not the case with cancer cells. So the marijuana sort of kind of nudges them and says, hey, you know, this is not cool. You know, every cell goes through programmed cell death, and you have to as well. So it kind of almost reminds it of it. The second thing that it does is that it impacts the blood supply to the tumors, okay? And it somehow targets the blood supply just to the tumors, and it almost cuts off the blood supply to the tumors, okay? And then the third thing that it does is that it impacts different sort of signals that we have in our body specifically in the cancer cells that prevent the cancer cells from detaching from the tumor and then traveling to another part of the body and invading another organ. So this we know based on research in cell cultures and in animal models. So it does have the potential. But at this point, I think the people that are making the claim that marijuana cures cancer, they're jumping the gun.
And it's at a
sort of disservice to patients that have cancer, because we do have cancer treatments that have very high success rates. And so, you know, imagine if somebody decides that
to forego it completely.
Right, exactly. And so people have to be careful in the claims that they're making,
right,
because it could be at a disservice to patients.
And Steve Jobs, I think, went the natural route. And I believe he had cancer, and I think he did.
He had pancreatic cancer.
Right.
I'm not sure of the specifics.
I don't know that he used medical marijuana, but I know that, you know, the problem is that those treatments are very expensive. And the money is in the treatment, not the cure. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And actually that's a very reasonable position. You have to take that position, because that's the truth. The truth is, those are the studies in the United States, maybe, and maybe worldwide. And it can be a disservice, because like you said, there are very effective things that,
yeah.
And that's why we talked about not demonizing the pharmaceutical companies.
No.
And the mainstream medical community. Actually, you went to a very great school, Northwestern, and then went on to medical school and did some amazing things. But what I would say, this is just my opinion. My opinion is people could keep an open mind, because just understand there are more interests involved. And actually, just like Dr. Patel was saying, she was thankful in becoming successful through the tough times. She grew up, she said, in the ghetto. She became very successful by having a greater perspective, having amazing parents that were, she said, immigrant parents that really, really did tough jobs, and it motivated her. She got into great schools because her parents did such amazing things and made so many sacrifices, and she loves that tough part of her life. It was a gift. I think pharmaceutical companies, we can look at that as a gift if they are maybe kind of brushing some things under the rug. Doctors like Dr. Patel might not be allowed to talk about that. It might not be very, you know, sort of something. But I can say that there probably is information that, based on money, could be not getting the full amount of attention that we would like it to. And maybe in time, because there needs to be more studies, we need to be sure about it. But we want to encourage those people and send them love if they do know of any other cures that are easier and cheaper, because we want to send them love and try to not only send them love, but convince them, if we could, in a nice way, that they won't lose anything. Ultimately, we can find a way for people not to lose anything if we can move towards some more open, cheaper cancer treatments that might be more natural. And Dr. Patel has dedicated her life to what is working right now, especially the things backed by science, backed by studies that have gone on, very, very in-depth studies from accredited universities and things. So Dr. Patel, I want to thank you so much for joining us at Believe. Our website is believe.love. Our iTunes is believeitunes.com. You've done a really great service, and I want to thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Okay, have a great day, everybody. Thank you very much.